Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. It's almost November, but there's still lots to do in the garden, and we'll talk about that today on the show. In the studio with me today, Erin Presley. She is the herb garden horticulturist at Old Brick Gardens in Madison. She also manages the wildflower and pond gardens there, and we'll talk about garden cleanup a bit with Erin. And certainly she can answer pretty much any gardening question you might have, and I hope you'll join in the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Erin Presley, great to see you. Welcome back.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Well, we have lots of things to talk about. It's kind of interesting that the first frost for southern Wisconsin was just last night. So the timing is kind of interesting.
I ordered it that way. Wouldn't that be nice if you could just order the weather that you wanted on demand?
So what are you doing at the garden? How does that affect the garden?
Well, we had a big push this past week to pull out, you know, the last of the annuals that we thought were going to be affected by frost. We have a wide variety of plant material that we overwinter for next year. So if you think of, you know, all the tropicals like bananas and elephant ears, those sort of things, I have some herb plants that I overwinter. So I have, you know, some rosemaries and some big bay leaf trees and that sort of thing. So all of that we've been working to get undercover, digging dahlias, that sort of thing. So we're really hustling to beat the frost in the past, you know, 2 to 3 weeks here.
And I got to thank you. You brought me some bay leaves and some fresh figs.
Yeah, we had a really nice donation of a huge fig tree that somebody, you know, passed our way last week, and it was just loaded with figs. So I nabbed a few this morning.
And the bay leaves will find a good home now that it's soup season. It's
yes,
perfect.
Soup season is upon us.
Well, Janet in Marshfield has a question that I bet you can answer. Let's go there. Hi, Janet.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. It's also bulb planting time, and my bulbs are ready, but the flower bed is like a mud pie.
Oh, really, muddy?
So I wonder how I plant them without them rotting, because I dug out all the irises last Sunday, and about half of them were rotten.
Oh, so it's really that wet. That creates a little issue there, Erin.
Yeah. Typically, most bulbs come from kind of almost Middle Eastern climates where they really appreciate good drainage. So if you're looking at an area that is typically like always wet, you might want to think of even just putting your bulbs in a different area. If it's more so that you just have had, you know, water accumulating there because of recent rains, I would maybe wait to let it dry out a little bit. On the other hand, though, it's usually good when you get bulbs shipped to you just to get them in the ground. So if you feel like the soil is at all workable and plantable, I would still go ahead and just pop them in there. But if you're looking at a situation where you have a really low spot in your yard and it frequently is super wet, you might want to think about looking for a different location for those bulbs.
Yeah. What kind of bulbs do you have there, Janet?
Tulips and daffodils and some of those little beady ones that you just plant in the grass alongside the flower bed.
Yeah.
That the rabbits eat pretty quickly. they've also eaten my rose bushes down to nothing. So what do I do with them? Because they're brand new this year, the rose bushes.
And they're and they're beaten right down to the ground?
There is not a stem left on one of them.
Oh, geez. I would just, you know, before the winter comes, maybe even think about putting some sort of caging, like rabbit fencing, around what is left of it, and then hope that in the spring it can resprout from the base, and then, you know, you'll be protecting it before the rabbits even have a chance to get at it.
When did they do this damage? Has it been just recently, or was it earlier?
Just recently.
Just recently, okay. All right.
So,
all right. So that's better than if it was a month ago.
Eaten right away. And roses do have the ability to resprout from, you know, very, very, very little live tissue at the bottom. So it's pretty likely you would still see that thing regrowing next year.
Yeah, there you go, Janet. Give it a little protection from those rabbits and see what happens in the spring. Thank you very much for calling. Jennifer in Madison emailed to ask if it's worthwhile to cover her kale with a frost blanket. Will that keep it alive or even growing? Would this work for her carrots? Or should she harvest them all now? Is it okay to plant garlic now? Can she cover them with the leaves from the yard?
Wow, this is like quite the laundry list of veggie garden questions. So speaking to the kale, kale is rather frost hardy, so those plants will probably look good unprotected down to temperatures of, you know, maybe 28, 26 degrees, something like that. If you did do some sort of protection with, you know, row cover, they will be able to utilize the heat that they get during the day a little bit better and probably put on a little bit more fall growth. So if you're really vested in keeping that kale going and being able to eat it for a few weeks yet, yeah, that might be worthwhile. I don't know. It depends on how much effort it's going to take, I guess, for you.
Carrots. Are you going to get much out of the carrots? Aren't going to grow anymore.
Yeah, they're not going to grow anymore. So those, if you have space in your fridge, it's just as beneficial to just dig them up and get them inside where you can access them and eat them.
And garlic.
Now is the perfect time to plant garlic. I actually planted garlic at work just on Monday. So those bulbs, you plant about an inch deep and add a little bit of fertilizer when you plant them so that they can start getting their roots established over the winter, and then you'll see them start to sprout in the spring.
Chris had called to suggest the lady that called earlier about the wet soil amend it with sand, but I'm not sure that's a good idea. Or what do you think?
Typically, if you have wet or clay areas in your yard, a better soil amendment to lighten them up is like a compost or peat moss, something like that. If you mix sand in, sometimes that has the tendency to create almost like a kind of like a concrete-like consistency. Yeah. So a little bit of peat moss might be a good addition there.
You can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org, and we'll get you on pretty quickly. I want to go back to this low-impact business. You wanted to talk a little about garden cleanup that is low impact, and maybe you can explain what that means.
Sure. So we at Ulbrich are really big proponents of doing your fall cleanup in a way that is environmentally friendly. And so a big part of that is trying to retain as much organic matter from all these plants that they've grown for you so nicely all season. Why do people still feel this compulsion to, you know, whack everything back in the fall, haul it out to the curb? That's important organic matter that you can be retaining on your own property and, hosting a lot of beneficial insects. There's a lot of our native bees that actually lay their eggs in plant material that has hollow stems. So think of like Baptisia or ornamental alliums or anything that has like kind of a hollow stem. Those are hosting actually the eggs of a lot of our important native bees, which are in a real crisis. Everybody, I think, is aware of the pollinator crisis. And if you cut all of that plant material down in the fall and ship it off to the local compost facility or let the city take it away, you're really jeopardizing the health of a lot of those pollinator species. And then additionally, just think of all the plants and the winter interests that they offer you, both ornamentally, think of like beautiful fall grasses that are catching the frost and the snow in the winter, and seed heads of plants like purple coneflower or asters and all the birds that love to feed on them. So we really try to urge people to, and in the garden at Ulbrich, we really urge a very light touch with fall cleanup, and we leave a huge proportion of our plant material just standing over the winter and then clean it up in the spring.
I leave mine, I'm lazy anyway, but when it comes to that, but I mean, I think it just looks nice in the winter, the blue stem and all the rest of it, coneflowers.
Yeah. Everybody spends a lot of time just, I think, sitting and looking out their windows in the winter. Don't you want to have something to look at, something interesting to see?
And the cats like it, too. They sit in the window and look out at the the birds that might come there. And they get a kick out of that as well. I'm just I'm trying to remember. There's something to keep in the back of your head when it comes to spring, because I wait a while in spring even before I start to clean it, because those insects, if you're cleaning up a little bit too early, then you're also removing the whole.
Right. So a lot of beneficial insects that overwinter in that plant material, they actually don't emerge until May or sometimes even June. So frequently what we'll do is when we do get to the point of cutting back some of those hollow-stemmed plants, instead of, throwing them right on the compost and burying them with other things, we kind of just set them off to the side in a nice sort of hidden spot, stick mm-hmm. them underneath some evergreens or something. And then although you did cut the plants back, the organisms inside of them are still able to complete their life cycle and emerge.
Oh, okay. And so when do you do that?
We start a lot of our spring cleanup, in April, maybe mid-April.
Yeah.
So, but anything that is hollow like that, those things, then we just kind of set off to the side. And then the majority of the rest of the plants, we actually mow up mm-hmm. With just a lawnmower set at its highest setting. And then that enables you to kind of recycle all of that plant material from last year into kind of creating a nice mulchy sort of duff layer.
Yes.
That's the start to your mulch for the year.
Brenda in Madison has a question for you. Hi, Brenda.
Hi there. Thanks for your show.
Sure.
I'm just wondering, how far back should I cut my peonies to get ready for winter, and what should I do with agave plants? And I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Well, peonies, you normally, most perennials in general, you would cut back to maybe 2 to 3 inches so that you can see, just for next spring, you can see where they're coming up again and you don't step on them or mulch over them. One exception to that would be if the peony that you have is woody, like a tree peony, don't cut that back at all. But if you have just old-fashioned peony, mm-hmm. 2 to 3 inches is a good rule of thumb. And then as far as your agave, if you potted it up and bring it into a nice sunny window, that should have no problem, withstanding the winter and be ready to go back out next spring.
Jean emailed about her garden cover crop mix seed from Mountain Valley Seed Company. Never used it before. Unfortunately, she bought it online. It was only recently delivered. Is it too late to plant it? Should she plant it now, and would it come up in early spring, or should she hold it for next year? Of course, we don't know what that garden cover crop mix includes. But
yeah, cover crops, and I am no expert on cover crops, but depending on what's in the mix, some things might be just kind of sit over the winter and be ready to go in the spring. You might find a few things in there that would germinate yet this year, but that seems unlikely. I would really just go back to Mountain Valley and see what their recommendations are as far as the usage of the cover crop.
Yeah, it depends on what's in that.
In it. Yeah.
What's in that mix? Jill in Racine. Hi.
Yeah, my garlic is in and it's fine. I've covered it with paper this year. Should I still plant milkweed, or can I wait, or what should I do? We moved, and all my milkweed is where we moved.
Oh, and you want to bring it over?
Mm-hmm. I have seed. I have plenty of seed.
Okay.
Should I plant it now?
So you're talking about the milkweed that you want to plant is from the seed. You're not talking about transplanting the actual plants.
Right. It's from seed.
Perfect. Yeah, that is, give yourself a nice clean seed bed and put those seeds, because a lot of our native plants rely on a winter cold period to actually spur their germination. So I would get a nice seed bed started and mark it out and probably just, you know, direct sow, and maybe, I don't even know if you would cover those seeds with soil or not. Probably just put them right on the soil surface.
Yeah, there you go. Go right ahead, Jill. Larry in Black Earth, your turn. Hi, Larry.
I'm full of ambition right now, and I got to rake up some leaves.
Okay.
I got some walnuts involved there, too, the walnut leaves, and I'm wondering, is that good or no good for putting in a garden for composting?
You know, it would be my guess.
I wouldn't do it.
That they, probably contain the juglone that is going to be, you know, inhibit the growth of a lot of your other plants. But I would say, you know, hop on the internet and just confirm that.
Well, if it's black walnuts, it will be a problem.
Yeah.
I can tell you that right now. And I don't know that you can, if you compost it.
I don't know how that would affect the juglone or,
Well, if you composted it correctly and got the heat up and so forth, that may work. But I'd check on that because I'm not sure. I'm sure there's a master gardener sitting and listening right now saying, Larry, you don't even know that. But I can't.
You can't know everything.
I can't remember. But it was me, Larry, I would be careful. Stay listening. Somebody's going to call and tell us exactly what to do there. But you can also go online and find that out. If you're planning, if you'd be using it in an area that where the plants are not affected by juglone, you know, you're probably okay. But I would, I'd check, you know, if you're going to put it in your vegetable garden, I would not, at least until I checked.
Yeah, I think better safe than sorry there is the way to go.
Yeah, for sure. But get out there and get the rest of those leaves up, Larry. It's a nice day in Black Earth. I'm pretty sure of that. And you sound ambitious. So get to it. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, man. Kathy and Madison, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You had a call a while back about cutting down peonies, but I have a gardening client that has a couple of peony bushes that are very mildewy. And I recommended to her that I cut them all down very close to the quick and rake off the leaves around them and not put them in compost. But do you have any other recommendations for dealing with
peony mildewy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one nice thing about a lot of plants that do get, you know, powdery or downy mildew is it doesn't really seem to affect their plant health that much. And honestly, if you have a plant that's prone to powdery mildew, kind of no matter what you do culturally, as far as raking things away and being so careful about that plant material, it's still going to be back next year. You know, good garden sanitation in that way is always a good bet. So if you do have a way to dispose of that peony by, you know, putting it somewhere other than your compost pile per se, go for it. But none of those things are probably going to prevent you from seeing that same powdery mildew again next year.
And and if you look around at the neighbors, everybody had mildew.
Yeah,
the humidity we had.
Yeah. But the great thing is that it doesn't affect the bloom of the plant. You know, early in the spring, those plants are not being affected by powdery mildew. And peonies are one thing that when they do get super mildewy like that, they're a good thing to cut down even a little bit on the early side compared to some of your other plants in your garden, because a lot of the times by September they're looking so crummy they're not really photosynthesizing or doing a lot of good aesthetically in your garden either.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Kathy. You can join in too. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Talking today with Aaron Presley, horticulturist at Olbrich Botanical Gardens of Madison. We're taking a look at all kinds of things, fall cleanup and every kind of question imaginable that we've had so far in vegetables and flowers. So I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Dave Potratz handling our engineering duties today. Jill Nadeau, our producer. And again, you're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Aaron Presley. from the Old Brick Botanical Gardens. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And some callers online. We've got a question relating to English lavender coming up next from Sue in Chippewa Falls. Sue, hello.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I have some English lavender in a few pots, and they're doing just great in the pots, but I don't know. I should probably get them in the ground in a sunny area, and I understand that they like that cactus type of soil, so I'm wondering if I should kind of line, you know, the ground with that, and then do I cover them during the winter, or should I bring them in and try to put them in a window where I know it'll stay about 60 degrees? Is mm-hmm. one of them a death sentence, or how well, can I keep them going?
You know, that's a little tricky, Sue, because lavender here in Wisconsin sometimes is kind of on the marginally hardy spectrum. So it's maybe a little late in the game to be putting them in the ground and then expect them to live over the winter. So if you're not, if you're willing to kind of take that gamble, yeah, go ahead and plant them right now and see if they make it or not. It probably would have been better.
You just plant them in the pots too.
Yeah, you could try that too. Or I guess there is an option because we do a lot of overwintering of rosemary at Olbrich, and you know, lavender is very similar yeah. plant to rosemary, so you might be able to try and bring that in and put it in a even if you had a place that was a little cooler than 60, I think might be nice, but that's probably a good temperature. Keep it on the dry side over the winter, and I guess hope for the best.
Yeah, I'd probably bring it in rather than try to bury it in the pot.
Yeah, I have a feeling that if they haven't gotten their roots established, you know, prior in the summer, they're probably not going to survive the winter outside.
So there you go, Sue. Thank you so much. Tom in Green Bay, hello.
Hello. Got some trees that I believe are either black walnut or butternut, but we don't know which, and wasn't sure if there's a real easy way to tell the difference between the two.
You know, Tom, I saw your question come up here, and I was quickly Googling on my phone what is the difference between black walnut and butternut, and I didn't really get any further beyond that. So I would say find a book from the library, maybe, a field guide to trees, and they're both species of juglans. So
yeah, they're both going to be a problem. Or it could be a problem.
As far as the juglone in the soil, mm-hmm. yeah. But I couldn't off the top of my head tell you how to identify the difference one between the other.
Yeah. Are there any seeds or nuts or anything?
Quite a few, yes. They have a husk around them. The pods, they're about the size, a little smaller than a tennis ball. And then that husk will decay quickly, and then there's a nut. That's about the size of, I don't know, a quarter, maybe half dollar.
What does the husk look like?
It starts a real pale green, which has a very distinct lemon-lime smell when it's fresh, but then quickly decays and it stains very easily to be a
that
dark
sure brown. That sure sounds like black walnut.
Yeah, that's a black walnut. That's a black walnut for sure. That's why I wanted to know about the nuts, because I've had a lot of experience over the years with staining of my hands.
Oh, yeah. Fall on your car and dent it, all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, the green, yeah, it's a black walnut. And in terms of the rest of it, check in online and take a look. But you've got a black walnut. And you're going to have problems if you're trying to garden in that area, for sure. The problem with black walnut is it's not only, I mean, the juglan is in the roots, but it's also in the leaves. So when the leaves fall down, you got to get rid of the leaves, or it's going to also create an issue for Solanaceae type
kind of affect other parts of your
tomatoes
garden.
Or anything, you're not going to get any tomatoes growing near the black walnut tree. Tom, does that help?
It helps tremendously. If I could, a follow-on question about the stuff in the soil. There are about 12 to 14-inch diameter trunks at the base. At what point does that usually start killing other things?
Well, you have to kind of look at the canopy.
Yeah, the drip line. So if you look at the full extent of the, you know, the diameter of the canopy of the tree, that is sort of reflective of also where the roots are spreading underneath. And anywhere in that zone, you're going to struggle with growing certain types of plants that are affected by the juglone that is emitted by the black walnut.
And you can go online. There is some information. There is a list of plants that will coexist and a list of plants that will not coexist with it. And if you think even at the UW Learning Store, UW Extension Learning Store, there's a list of plants that work. So you really do have to be mindful of that, or you're going to not be happy.
Right. The good news is that a lot of our native woodland plants have adapted to, you know, coexisting with those black walnuts throughout their entire evolutionary history. So if you're looking to do some sort of, you know, native plant gardening, there'll still be a lot of species that will be tolerant of the black walnut.
Absolutely. Good luck, Tom. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Seth in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Seth.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I have a question. I have a 4x4 community garden plot, and you were talking about leaving plant matter for more ornamental plants, for organic matter and natural composting. Can I do the same thing with the remnants of my vegetables and herbs? If I finish my harvest, can I leave the roots in? Can I... What would I do with, like, tomato plants? Can I chop up and lay them down, or what? Do you have any recommendations?
Sure. There's going to be kind of a dual approach that you're going to take there. A lot of things, you know, plant matter that's coming off of, say, like your carrot tops or things like that, feel free to leave that all in right in your garden plot, and that'll just be, you know, turn into nice soil next year. The one thing you are going to want watch out for, though, is specifically like tomatoes, when they start to get a lot of fungal diseases later in the summer, and, you know, they're full of black spots and have all this really diseased foliage. That's something that you want to remove to, you know, the best thing is a really hot compost pile that will break down some of those pathogens. But some of those things can be present you know, overwinter on the soil surface in the diseased plant matter, so that you want to remove out of your gardening area so you're not kind of fostering those same problems for next year.
Yeah, and I imagine you have other plots right next to yours, Seth?
Or? Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be kind of looking at those spots. If you've got tomatoes or diseased tomato plants right around you, you've got the same kind of issue, or you could have the same issue. And so you might, if you know the people around you, you might be telling them to get rid of their tomato plants too, if they're diseased or composted somewhere away. Right, Aaron?
Yeah. Does that answer your question, Seth?
Very helpful. And we do have a composter, so I will just chuck them in there.
Oh,
yeah,
there you go.
Sounds good.
Perfect. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you very much for calling. Karen in Marinette. Let's go to you now. Hi, Karen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I listen to your show a lot, and I love it. Learned a lot of great things.
Thank you.
Very useful and helpful. My question is, my clematis started turning brown like mid-August.
Oh,
and
sure.
Wilting. And I'm wondering what that is. It's never done it before.
Clematis can be affected by a wilt, which I believe is a bacterial disease, and certain varieties are more or less prone to being affected by that, and it will do exactly what you're describing, where the whole plant kind of just slowly through the month of August just turns kind of black and just real crummy looking. And so I have one of those actually at work that the exact one, the other clematis all around it are fine, but this particular variety happens every year. The good news is that that is not really affecting the plant health, and you may or may not see that disease again next year. But basically all you need to do is just, you might as well just cut that back right now and just, you know, look forward to it hopefully being healthier next year. But it's really nothing to worry about.
Okay. And can you can compost that?
Yeah, that should be fine. You've got a nice hot compost pile.
There you go, Karen. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Jeff in Mauston, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Oh, hi, Larry. I hope Jill told you what my question was, because I'm a little bit like you. I'm old enough where I don't remember everything all the time.
Well, what can we help you about? Composting?
That's right. I've got a compost bin in my back, you know, back behind my fence, but it doesn't really seem like it gets hot. I'm wondering what the secret is on this hot composting idea.
Yeah, sure. It's probably a decent time to talk a little bit about the procedures for composting, because there are some things you have to do over the course of time with a compost pile.
I think that having a really, really hot, active compost pile, there's kind of an art to it. A big thing is having an appropriate mixture of kind of just like carbonaceous and nitrogenous materials. So think of it like green and brown. And you want to have a mix of those two types of materials and in layers too, so that they are mixing together and able to interact and generate heat to get your compost going. So think of mixing, like now is a great time, with all the fall leaves. So that's a carbonaceous, you know, brown material. And then mix that with your grass clippings from the last, you know, mowing of your lawn, which is a green material. Or like kitchen scraps are green. So that's part of it there. You need to have nice, and also having those carbonaceous, the more kind of fluffy brown materials in there contributes to airflow within the pile, mm-hmm. which is really important. So you need to make sure that you're not getting, you know, layers of matted material within the compost pile.
Yeah, run them through the lawnmower.
Yep, especially if you're doing leaves. Going through the lawnmower is really helpful. Appropriate, you know, keeping it fairly moist. You need to have water, you know, accessible throughout the different layers of the pile to keep the compost going. There's a lot
turning,
to it, actually.
And then turning it. You turn it?
Right. Yeah. So, you know, let it sit to a certain extent where you feel like the bottom is kind of starting to break down, and then get in there with a fork and flip the whole thing over and kind of mix up what you have going.
So you follow that, Jeff?
Well, how about crab apples? I got a lot of those. Can I put those in there?
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
You might get a lot of little baby crab apples in your compost pile at the certain times if they're not getting cooked enough in there, but that's definitely a fair game as far as material for the pile goes.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Kathy in Grafton, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I also have a question about a clematis plant.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find information, and it seems confusing to me because it's Clematis arabella, and I'm thinking that this is my first year, so I'm thinking it will just die back on its own. But then I see some information that says cut it back to 1 foot in late winter, which for us would mean it would be covered with snow, so it's not making sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that if you're looking at a resource that says late winter, it's possibly geared to a little bit warmer climate. Like, say, if you were in England and in late winter, things would actively be starting to grow again. But typically, we would be cutting back clematis in the same time you're doing the rest of your spring cleanup, you know, in maybe March if you can get at it, or April. But you typically will also start to see pretty early on buds emerging from the clematis. So if you'd like to have it be a little bit longer and taller, you could cut it back at a higher level. Or if it if you do see, you know, the whole thing is dead all the way back to the ground, sometimes you can just cut them off at, you know, even 6 inches. A lot of times the rabbits also eat them and kind of do your work for you. So, but you would be assessing all of that in, you know, around April.
Yeah. There you go, Kathy. Thank you. Jerry in Mequonago. Hello. What's on your mind?
Hi. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I have a pond in my garden pond, and last year I covered it with a plastic and it had a heater in it and the water never froze. And this year I put water lilies, papyrus, and Siberian irises in pots in the pond. Can I just leave them all winter if I in that, or do I have to treat them some other way?
And you're going to keep them covered and heated?
Yes.
Wow. So you've got a pretty cushy life in there.
Yeah. I think I should be fine.
Yeah, right? I would think that's totally a reasonable thing to expect them to do well if you're keeping the water warm enough, and it shouldn't be a problem as far as I know.
How big's your pond?
It's 8x8.
8x8. Okay. So it's not a great big pond. So that's a pond that you should be able to keep the water temperature fairly even from one end of the pond to the other, I would think. Sometimes if you get a bigger pond, it's like on the edges, it can be...
Oh, get colder than the
rest. You get colder
the...
on the edges.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. But 8-footer should be fine.
Yeah, that seems like a reasonable expectation.
Good luck, Jer. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Hugh in Appleton. Hi.
Hello. Hey, I was cleaning up the garden, and I noticed I had some around the boards for a raised bed. I had slugs down there, and they still seem to be moving. And how do they overwinter, and what's their life cycle, and what should I do about them, if anything?
Wow. You know, I am actually not sure about slugs and what do they die off in the winter or overwinter as a...
They don't overwinter as
Yeah, they
slugs.
Probably overwinter as like in an egg form would be my guess. So I don't think there's really any benefit to doing anything to control them at this point in the game because whatever eggs they have, they've already laid. And there's probably nothing that they're really attacking in your garden or eating or... right now, so I just wouldn't worry about it, honestly.
Get rid of the ones you got there if it's easy enough.
If it's really bothering you, yeah.
Yeah, if it's bothering you, but otherwise I wouldn't worry too much about it. Something to think about next spring, if there were a lot of them, they're likely there's going to be slugs
right.
again next year, and so that has some implications if you're thinking about mulching your garden and so forth. Hugh, do you mulch?
Yeah, right now I have a bunch of mowed grass and leaves that I had dumped on the garden, and I'm going to let that set out there and attempt to decompose over the winter.
Yeah, that's
so,
fine.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, that's I was thinking in terms of next year, if you put a heavy mulch around a lot of plants, if there are a lot of slugs there, you got to keep your eyes peeled for slugs because that's what they like.
Especially in these, you know, wet, humid weather that we've been getting the past couple summers. I know my mom is very fixated on the slugs in her yard, and she's always out there, you know, picking them, or sometimes she'll put salt on them, and, you know, that'll dry them up and take care of the problem pretty fast. But definitely requires a lot of vigilance on her part.
There you go. Hugh, thank you very much for calling. Erin Presley, our guest today. The horticulturist at one of the horticulturists at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. Great to have her with us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at your garden during this fall season for this edition of Garden Talk. Erin Presley, our guest today from Olbrich Botanical Gardens. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. Appreciate it. Lots of callers online, some great emails there. Carol in Escanaba, Michigan, emailed about butternut telling it from black walnut. Of course, the nuts of the black walnuts are round, and the butternuts are a little more barrel-shaped, so that is true for sure. The second is bark, and I should have brought that up. I should have known to bring that up. The black walnuts have a dark brown. It's furrowed bark at maturity, where the butternuts are smooth, more a gray color, I think, a whitish-gray colored bark. So some more information on the butternut and the black walnut. Linda in Oconto will give you a chance now. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Yes, I am calling about a couple questions. I am surrounded by black walnuts and butternuts. My father thought, you know, we could make a fortune by planting them 20 years ago, wood and everything. And, it's been a little difficult planting around them, but they're still around, and I still have nuts. My father cracks them during the winter, and my mother makes candy and fudge with the black walnuts. And the butternuts, yeah, I'm not sure what to do with them. They look like a diamond.
Yeah. But
they seem to be spreading all over the place. I have learned what I can plant around them, what I can't, what dies and what lives around them. But my main question was about Japanese quiche.
Quince, you mean, or?
Quiche. Japanese quiche is a bush that has little round yellow fruit.
Hmm.
My mom would make jam with them and jellies. But they keep spreading. I don't know how to get them under control. Have you heard of them?
Japanese quiche.
Yeah, I guess I am not quite sure what you're talking about there.
Maybe somebody else will know on that one. In terms of getting out of hand, they're probably whatever fruit is falling and then just reseeding probably in the ground, or maybe the squirrels are having at it and doing that a bit. But you can,
Is this a plant that's spreading by seeds, or the individual shrub is just getting much bigger?
Yes, because I have a male and two females.
Huh.
Because I was told, I planted them in 2010, and I was told that I need a male and a female for them to grow fruit.
Yeah.
Because I have pails and pails of fruit.
Man, I tell you what, we're going to have to call on our listeners here, because Japanese quiche is something I've never heard of. It may be a sort of a non-scientific name for whatever it is.
And there may be a picture would be really helpful if you could.
If you could email us a picture at ideas@wpr.org, if you could send a photo. But I think it's quince. It may well be quince rather than quiche that you're thinking about. And if it was Japanese quince, Aaron, anything there?
I guess the best thing that I can say without exactly knowing the full situation is winter is great for pruning because you can see the structure of the plants. And so if you feel you need to get in there and do some size control, this upcoming winter is a good time for that. Depending on the fruiting cycle and flowering cycle of the plants, you might be cutting off some flower buds and maybe having some reduced fruiting next year, but it sounds like you already got plenty of fruit anyway, so maybe kind of taking a year off is not going to be a problem for you.
Yeah. Thanks, Linda, for calling. I appreciate your call. She said quiche, but I think it's really quince.
That seems pretty likely.
Likely. Well, maybe someone else who's listening in has more information than we have. Scott in Oshkosh, we'll go to you next. Hi, Scott.
Hello. Hi, Larry and Aaron. People are probably getting tired of the black walnut issue, but I might have a little information for you here. I've dealt with the same thing for 26 years. Apparently, you can compost black walnut leaves because the dugong toxin does break down with exposure to air, water, and bacteria. It's not recommended, however, to compost black walnut chips, wood chips. Mm. That comes from Iowa State University Extension. Now, having said all that, I still wouldn't compost my black walnut.
Yeah, I know. If you don't get that compost pile up with enough heat, you're going to have, and that's the problem because so many of us aren't good at keeping up with our compost.
It's hard
pile.
To get a really good compost pile. To get it going.
Yeah,
keep it going. Yeah,
yeah, you're absolutely right. And Scott, I bet you get those leaves off the ground though, don't you?
I try to, yeah.
it's not the easiest thing in the world. And all the nuts and the darn squirrels are out there planting them and everything else. I have a squirrel. I don't have a black walnut tree. And I don't have one within even very close to my yard. But there's a squirrel who brings me a black walnut and parks it. Climbs up the few steps to the back porch and puts it right in the corner of the porch.
Artistically deposits it.
And it happens every year.
Your porch.
It happens every year. I have one black walnut hidden on my porch in the corner. And I don't have any black walnut trees even nearby. Scott, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And thanks for that information. I really appreciate it. Ginny in Verona, your turn. Hi, Ginny.
Hi. My question is about pampas grass. I planted some, I believe it was called zebra grass years ago, and it's beautiful, has a nice plume on it, and it gets like 6 feet tall, and it multiplies rapidly. My question is, am I supposed to be cutting that down for the winter or leave it as it is for the birds?
This is a great question because this really speaks to a lot of things that we're touching on this show. So what you have there is miscanthus is the Latin name for those grasses. The zebra grass has those cool kind of white stripes on that real vibrant green foliage and then the plumy seed heads right now. So there's a few good reasons to leave that standing through the winter. You have the winter interest of those, nice shiny seed heads really catch the light and the frost in the winter. The miscanthus is also a species that does have hollow stems. So it's very, very likely that there are eggs of native bees that are relying on that for their like winter overwintering and could be emerging from there in the spring. So it's and additionally, a lot of birds also use just the structure of the miscanthus as a place for cover in the winter because it's, big and fluffy and there's lots of good places to hide in there for them. So it's a great plant to leave standing. And then what you could be doing in the spring is if you are wanting to watch out for those native bees, you could take the entire mass of that grass and cut it down, in May is a good time for most ornamental grasses. Cut it down to 4 inches and then just gently set that plant material just kind of off in some little back corner of your garden or underneath a big evergreen or something like that and give those organisms that could be living in there time to hatch from their eggs and emerge next spring.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And that grass really looks pretty in the winter time.
Oh, yeah. Just beautiful. Yeah. Also, we really like to use the, if you are going to do a little bit of trimming of it, the seed heads make great winter decorations. So we use them a lot of times in pots at work in the winter.
Yeah. Pots at work and in the house.
Yeah, that too.
Why not in the house as well? Well, thank you so much for calling, Ginny. Beth, have you got a question for us? In Chippewa Falls.
Yeah, hi. I have a twofold question. One is how do I prepare my asparagus plant for the winter, and is there anything I should do? And secondly, I have one on raspberries. I tried them before, and someone says you just mow them down with your lawnmower, and we did that, and they never came back. And somebody says, well, you cut them off maybe 4 to 8 inches or something. I'm not sure. Also, fertilizing both of these two things are questions I have.
Yeah. So sure. You got a quick answer for that. I think on the go ahead, Erin.
Oh, I would say that you are now is a good time to cut your asparagus down and just, you know, put that on your compost pile. You might as well just be done with that. And then that task is done for next spring when you're ready to see the asparagus start coming up. And then the raspberries, that is an interesting technique to run them over with the lawnmower.
That is not a good technique.
Yeah, that seems like a little harsh. But again, that's a good one to leave standing over the winter and then cut them back in the spring.
And cut the dead ones out in the spring. And
right.
There you go. Thank you so much, Beth, for calling. Appreciate it. Erin Presley, our guest today. She is a horticulturist at Olbrich Botanical Gardens, a wonderful place to visit. I'm Larry Mealer, and you're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mealer. My guest today, Erin Presley, back with us. It was always great to have her come by. She's the herb garden horticulturist at Olbrich Gardens in Madison, manages the wildflower and the pond gardens there. She knows a whole lot about vegetables as well, and sedges and annuals, and I think we can take a crack at any question you might have.
Bring it on.
Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Beverly called to remind us that miscanthus can be invasive. There are many native grasses you can use in the garden as well.
Yeah, that is true, especially in states a little bit to the south of us. There are problems with especially a lot of the older varieties of miscanthus reseeding. We're lucky here in Wisconsin that we are not quite, you know, our climate isn't quite warm enough to facilitate that yet. But there are, of course, a lot of really awesome large-scale native grasses like that. If you think of, you know, big blue stem is a good one, mm-hmm. Indian grass, some of the larger panicums, which are switchgrasses, that would be native and then offer a lot of the similar benefits that we were talking about with the miscanthus.
Yeah. You know, I was going to ask you earlier, and this is probably a good time to do it, the remodeling that's going on at Olbrich, how's that going, and what is it, for those who don't know, that there's remodeling, and what's going
right.
on?
Right. Oh, boy. We are coming down the home stretch on our construction projects. So we are just now, they have got the facade on and pretty much have our new building enclosed, which is a learning center. And we host hundreds of classes throughout the course of the season. And never before have we had actual dedicated classroom space. We've always just had our classes in random conference rooms or just kind of wherever we can squeeze them in. So we're adding classrooms. And then as a part of that project, we're going to have a rooftop garden. And then mm-hmm. we also, the entire structure is underneath it has a huge cistern, which is collecting all of the rainwater and then is going to provide water that is able to be used in our greenhouse and conservatory. So that's pretty amazing.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and we also are updating and have reconstructed our support greenhouses for the conservatory. So where the extra plants are housed or growing on for the conservatory, and then also production facilities, because we do have a plant propagator, and she grows most of the material that gets planted in the garden, especially as far as the annuals go. So we got some brand spanking new facilities. looking at moving the material into the new greenhouses in November, and then we'll probably be hosting an opening for the Learning Center in January.
Oh,
so
great.
It has been a summer of, man, a lot of people working at work. There's, you know, you look out on any given day and there's maybe, I must have counted 30 contractors that were there. And it's not, you know, it's not a big place. Ulbrich isn't that huge. You can really sense the extra bodies and the hubbub and the equipment, but they've been really great to work with. And we're very, very excited. And then next year we'll be looking at doing the gardens around those new buildings, which obviously
it's gonna be fantastic.
Very exciting. Permeable paving. So we're going to be absorbing a lot more of our own water right back into the garden. Just a lot of really exciting improvements.
Well, Pam in Whitewater has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Pam.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got some Mexican heather plants this spring. That's a new plant for me. I think it's a tender perennial, and I'm wondering if you can help me decide how to try and winter it over out in my garden.
Outside in your garden?
Yeah. I have it up close to the house on the southeast corner, so I think it's pretty well protected. And I wonder if I can just mulch it in, if I can expect it to come back or not.
Yeah, I'm not real familiar with the plant that you're talking about, but to my mind, what I know as Mexican heather, I would not think of as being hardy in our climate.
Is it right up against the house?
Yeah, it's. I planted it close to the house knowing it was tender and with the hopes of being able to bring it back.
Yeah. The one thing that I would say that might give you a little bit of extra chance of overwintering there is presumably this is a plant that probably likes good drainage if it is actually like a Mexican native, you know, kind of likes it hot and dry. So you might want to do something like give it some winter protection, but not with like a heavy material. Do something like, so maybe as opposed to putting a bunch of mulch around it, do something more like evergreen boughs, you know, kind of cover it with some extra boughs to give it a little bit of extra insulation over the winter. But that's a plant I'm going to have to look into and see, kind of get to the bottom of what you really got there.
I think that's good advice, though, on the boughs, as opposed to, you wouldn't want to put leaves.
Yeah, because that might hold too much moisture. A lot of times plants that are marginally hardy like that, like if you think of, we were talking about the lavender before, they croak off over the winter more so because of like freezing and thawing and moisture, more so than the actual temperature.
Although I do have a couple of plants that were never supposed to live through the winter, but I have them right up against the house and they make it everywhere. So why not give it a shot?
Yep,
Pam?
That's half the fun of gardening, right?
Oh, man. Thank you for calling. Eric in Adams, we'll go to you now. Hi, Eric.
Hi, how are we doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call.
So my question is, in my backyard, I got a lot of moss growth, and I really like the moss. It's a lot easier and to maintain than grass. I'm just kind of curious to know what I can do to kind of help keeping that going, and with this fall, should I clean up the leaves or kind of just leave a layer on top of it to protect it?
Keep it shady and wet.
You're gonna have all kinds
of moss.
And it's
there.
So refreshing to hear somebody who has shade in their yard, and instead of just fighting against it and trying to go grow grass and fertilize and all this stuff, you're just embracing what's naturally growing there. And yeah, I think just like Larry said, you know, the more moisture, the better. And I don't think it really matters one way or the other if you leave leaves on it or pull the leaves off over the winter. I don't think that mosses are pretty hardy characters, and they can take a lot of, you know, drying out and kind of tolerate a lot of abuse. So I don't think you need to do anything special.
I wouldn't use a garden rake to rake up
the
leaves, but otherwise you're probably fine.
Yeah. Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville actually has a really neat area that is devoted entirely to moss gardening. It's really lovely.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you, Eric, for calling. Lee in Green Bay called to say that Mexican heather is an annual. Well, it's probably a perennial somewhere.
Yes, that's in Mexico, perhaps.
It's, but in other words, Lee in Green Bay says, you know, you're not, don't be shocked if your Mexican heather doesn't make it through the winter. There you go. Let's go to Suzanne, or Susan in Stoughton. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. It is Suzanne. You were right the first time.
Okay.
So we have this nice property in town that is a historic property, and we have a super challenging hedgerow that includes buckthorn. Early black walnut. It's not super well established, maybe thanks to the buckthorn, and mulberries that are spreading. And
this does sound challenging.
Yeah, that have been choked out. And so I want to go in and clean house. And I am wondering the best time and the best process. Like, I've heard about cutting them down and then putting essentially Roundup, which philosophically I'm against in most applications, but directly on it and not like localized to kill the stems and the roots. And so I'm wondering if there, if you have suggestions of the way of like a good way to clean this out and to be responsible, but for it to be effective in the best time of year and process, please.
Yeah, you know, sadly, what you're talking about as far as cutting back and having to treat those cut stumps with an herbicide is about the only way you're going to be able to get this situation that you have under control, unless all of these plants are small enough that you are able to just put some, you know, muscle into it and dig them out. Especially a lot of the littler buckthorns are actually pretty easy to pull. But I would consult, I'm not exactly sure what is the best time of year to do that sort of activity. I think that is something that, you know, ecological restoration companies are doing throughout the entirety of the year.
Yeah, there's a certain temperature, and I don't know if it's 50 degrees, where it a chemical like Roundup becomes not active enough.
Yeah,
to...
for Roundup, I think it is typically around 50. There are other types of chemicals that might be effective at
colder temperatures
or are specifically marketed for woody plant material like you're talking about. So who do you think would be a good person to consult about that, Larry?
Actually, if you called Lisa Johnson at the Dane County Extension office, or talk to the master gardener there that sometimes is on call. So the UW Dane County Extension phone number, Lisa Johnson's the person and could probably help you out with that. But there's a, you know, sort of typically it's called brush killer or it might be Roundup. And some brush killers will work in colder temperatures, but you need to make the cut and put it on.
Right.
You
and typically,
can't let it sit.
Yeah, typically you're applying that in a super localized manner, which is good.
Yeah.
You know, you have almost like a little paintbrush or a little dabber, and you just stick it exactly on the cut end. So it's not something that's really dissipating into the further environment around, you know, aside from exactly where you're applying it, which is a good thing.
Yeah, and the small ones you can pull. And I've got a little secret. Well, it's not a secret. You're not going to get this done in 1 year, probably. You're probably is something that's ongoing, kind of thing that you have to be sort of vigilant about over the years to keep it from coming back, because the birds bring the seeds in and start it all over again.
Yeah, but it sounds like you're on the right track with your thought process.
Yep, definitely. Thanks, Suzanne. Lee in Watertown, your turn. Hi, Lee.
Thanks for taking my call. I just have a question about geraniums. What's the best way to dig them up and preserve them for next spring? Do you just shake all the dirt off, hang them upside down? I've heard several different, you know, theories on that.
You know, we typically overwinter our geraniums as cuttings. So instead of saving the individual plant, we would take a cutting off of it this time of year and then just grow it on from the cutting into a new plant for next year. So I don't have a lot of experience with storing. I know a lot of people will just leave them even in their pots and then maybe cut them back slightly and then put the whole thing just in an area that doesn't freeze, like in the you know, basement or a garage that stays somewhat warm. Yeah.
If you put them in the garage and it's a cement floor, it's better to put a piece of wood down and then put the pot on top of the wood, because then it's not conducting the cold to the pot. That's something that helps in that kind of situation. So, and the cutting idea, that's you really get good results with that.
Yeah, the plants stay nice and healthy, and you know, you're not kind of dealing with the full bulk of the plant. If you do have really nice big geraniums that you want to save intact for next year, though, I guess I don't know much about storing them as like a tuber or as a
well. Sometimes
the
they're hung
mass.
Upside down in dry places and just left, and then replanted in spring. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. It's not
like most good garden experiments.
It's not the surest thing in the world, for surely. Thanks for calling, Todd in Iron Mountain, Michigan. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I got a call years and years ago, about 20 years ago, to rescue an old VW camper bus. So I went down to take a look at it, and I was on the backside of a barn covered in lichens and moss and pine needles and pine cones.
Cool.
So I cleaned it off, got it running, but I left the lichens on there. The whole top of it was covered with lichen. And I've been driving the thing around for 20 years. I've been all over the country, and everywhere I go, everybody comments on the lichen. But that stuff has hung on, and it has survived and lived up there.
That's
and
awesome.
It has traveled all over with me.
Do you leave the bus outside all year round?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All year round, yep.
So it's getting moisture and all that when it...
That is like a true hippie move right there. Not only do you have the VW bus, you're encouraging the lichen.
I love that story. Hey, send us a picture of that. If not today, at some point, I want to see that VW bus, will you?
All right. I'll see if I can round one up.
Mueller at whisk.edu. That's the place to go. I want to see that bus. Steve in Milwaukee, hi.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, appreciate the call.
Yeah, I'm just trying to wonder if I should toast chestnuts and acorns to help the squirrels out during the winter.
Oh, leave them out for food? I don't think you have to toast them. Yeah.
Well, you could toast them. That would help preserve them.
Yeah.
I think the Indians used to do that. Yeah.
Huh?
I would be pretty confident that the squirrels don't really care too much about the state of the acorns. Like, they're just harvesting and finding whatever they can throughout the entirety of the winter. So I wouldn't find any reason to do anything special with them.
I'm not sure that they're, you know, I guess if there's the issue, okay, some of them are going to maybe, if they're too moist inside or whatever, they're going to start rotting from the inside.
Yeah.
But
maybe the best thing would be to just before you store them away, lay them out for a week or two and kind of let them dry down a little bit, so you're not putting real wet plant material into storage. But beyond that, I don't think I'd be messing much with it.
You know what I do, though, just for fun? I take some of them and I try it.
Just see.
I take some and I put them, dry them out in the oven and just see what happens with those as opposed to the other ones. That might be kind of interesting to experiment, to watch the squirrels and what they do with the one.
See, what's their preferred food? Yes.
What they prefer. I think I'd do that. Thanks, Steve. Mary in Madison, hi.
Oh, I'm wondering about the metal garden lawn.
At Obrick, yeah.
Right, yeah.
What grass or grasses are predominant there, and how is it doing? Is it mostly European grasses?
The grasses, I believe, are selections of native grasses. They're mostly fescues. There's some fine fescue in there, and also tall fescue. And if you're if you would like to email Larry, or you're also welcome to email me at my work, I have the information on exactly what comprises all of the grass blends in our various meadows, because we have we've experimented with quite a few mixtures with varying results, and we're starting to really glom on to some of the ones that are a lot hardier and keep out the weeds better and that sort of thing. But I could get you that information if you are feel free to email me. My work email is E Presley, so it's EPRESLEY at cityofmadison.com. And the meadows are doing very well. You know, we have experimented a lot to find out the grass blends and the management strategies that are working the best for us, and looking good. We're also starting to incorporate a lot more flowering material into the meadows so that they're more interesting throughout the rest of the year, too. Jeff Epping, our director of horticulture, every year gives a nice gardening class that focuses on the meadows. So if you're really looking to dive into that topic, we definitely have a lot of resources for you. And if you shoot me an email, I'd be happy to forward at least the information about the grass blends.
And if you didn't get that all written down, if you go to Old Brick Botanical Gardens, your contact information is up there.
Yep, sure is.
Yeah, for sure. And Marilyn, you have a quick question for us.
I'd like to make some leaf mold, and I need advice on how best to make the leaf mold, how to use it, and could I just put shredded leaves on my perennial beds in fall and get the same results? And do you have any recommended resources?
These are great questions, and this is exactly what we're trying to highlight during this show. Basically any way that you can use those leaves is going to be beneficial for your garden. Leaf mold is more of a kind of compost-like product that is the result of putting the leaves in just a big pile in an undisturbed location, and then they slowly break down, you know, by summer of next year, they will have broken down into a nice organic soil amendment that's like compost. But on the other hand, you can also use those leaves at any time, more like a mulch. And I would suggest just maybe chopping them up with a lawnmower first, so they're a little bit easier to deal with and don't blow away. But basically, any way you can keep those leaves on your property, they're going to do good things for your garden.
You're going on a trip, aren't you?
Yes, we have some super awesome trips planned from Old Brick for next year in February. We are going to Arizona, and so we're taking a 5-night tour that includes the garden destinations in Tucson and Phoenix, has some private gardens incorporated, Saguaro National Park. It's going to be really, really, really awesome. And
how do people find out about it?
We are working with our travel agency is Country Travel Discovery, so you could hit their website. Also, our website under our events lists the trips that are coming up.
So Arizona, and then the other trip was to...
Jeff is taking a group to Prince Edward Island in Nova Scotia in August. yeah.
Erin, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
It was a real whirlwind this time, Larry.
Yeah, really a lot of questions.
Yeah, thank you.
Erin Presley from the Old Brick Botanical Gardens. Thanks so much for listening, and stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network.